For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's January 8th. We're in Treyaser and we are starting Nachum, Perek Aleph. Masa Ninvei, Sefer Chazon Nachum Ho'el Koshi. This is a Nevuah about Ninvei, and in the book of the Nevuah of Nachum Ho'el Koshi. So the Targum here tells us that this is a Nevuah about the curses that come upon Nineveh, that Yonah already spoke about Nineveh, and they did a sort of tshuva at that time, so they were spared at that time. But now Nachum picks up where Yonah left off, and he says in Nevuah about the subsequent generation of Nineveh, and how they would be destroyed because of their averos. So this, the Nevuah of Nachum is all about the destruction of Nineveh. Now Nineveh is the city of Ashur, and Ashur is Assyria. Ashur was, the king of Ashur was Sennacherib. And Sennacherib is the one during the during the kingdom of Chizkiyahu, he took the Aseres HaShvatim, he took the 10 tribes into Golus, and then he attempted to also conquer Yerushalayim, and that's when his army was destroyed, was decimated. Now we learned all about this in Sefer Malachim, and it's also in Sefer Yeshaya, it's discussed. And it's, of course, in Divrei Hayamim. And Sennacherib, when his army was destroyed, and he was killed, so that effectively made Ashur no longer a world power. However, the country was not yet completely destroyed. And his sons, who continued after him, continued to do averos. And this is the Nevuah about the final destruction of Nineveh. So the Pasuk says, Kael Kano V'Nokem Hashem. Hashem is a god Kano means like a zealous god. He's going to take revenge. V'Nokem takes revenge. Nokem Hashem U'Bal Chema. Hashem takes revenge and he has anger. Nokem Hashem Litzarav. Hashem takes revenge against his enemies. V'noter hu loivav. And he bears a grudge against his enemies. The Medrash says that even though the Pasuk says, Lo sikom v'lo sitar es b'nei amecha, that one is not supposed to take revenge, nor one is supposed to bear a grudge. So how is it that Hashem takes revenge and bears a grudge? And the answer is because the Pasuk says, Es b'nei amecha. Not allowed to take revenge or bear a grudge against those of your own nation. It means your fellow Jew who is behaving as a Jew. But anybody who is not behaving as a Jew, there is no avera v'losikom v'lositor, there is no such iser. Not taking revenge and not bearing a grudge is like all of those mitzvahs in the Torah, almost all the mitzvahs in the Torah that talk about behavior between people. They almost all say that they're talking specifically with your fellow Jew who is behaving as a fellow Jew, not someone who is not keeping the Torah. Then those mitzvahs do not apply. So Hashem here, when it says that he has anger and he takes revenge and he bears a grudge, it's all against the people of Nineveh, the non-Jews, who were, of course, not behaving with Yirat Shamayim, with fear of heaven. The Pasuk says the word Nokem, taking revenge, three times in the Pasuk. It says Nokem Hashem, and it says Nokem Hashem again, and Nokem Hashem again. It says three times. So the Chazal say this is a reference to the three times that Sanherev attacked and subjugated the Aseres Hashvatim, the ten tribes. Sanherev first attacked and took the northern tribes, the northern part of the northern kingdom. That would be Naphtali and Zevulun, those tribes, into Galus. A few years later, he attacked again and took those that were in Aver, Hayarden, Ruvain, and Gad into Galus. And then a few years later, he attacked again and took the rest of the Aseres Hashvatim into Galus. So it was three different times that he attacked, and during those three times, he eventually took all ten Shvatim into Galus. It was during his attempt to take Yehuda and Binyamin, the southern kingdom, into Galus, that he was destroyed. But the Nikima, the revenge, is for the three times that he did take the ten Shvatim into Galus. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Hashem erech ha'paim udol koach. Hashem is slow to anger and has much strength. This means for those who fear him. Vinake lo yinake Hashem, and Hashem will not forgive those who are his enemies. Besufa uvisara darko, his way is with a tempest, a wild wind. V'anan avak raglav, and with cloud and the dust of his feet, meaning Hashem uses the elements against those who he wants to punish. And he'll bring wild weather against those he wants to punish. The Medrash says that when Yaakov Avinu fought with the Malach, with the angel of Esav, it says, Vayeavek ish imo. And a man, the verb is, he was avak with him. Avak is the same word over here, which could mean dust. Rashi there explains that the simple meaning of the pasuk is, as people fight, then they're trying to knock each other down, and they're wrestling, then they kick up the dirt around them. And there's a cloud of dirt that forms around the two who are struggling with each other. So that's why it says, Vaye avek ish imo, which means a man dusted with him. And they fought with each other, and there was dust rising into the air. So the Medrash says that dust went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod. That dust went to the holy throne of Hashem. As it says, V'anan avak raglav, and the cloud and the dust of his feet, meaning that this is a reference to the dust that rose up from that battle between Yaakov Avinu and the Malach and the Malach of Esav. That battle between Yaakov and the Malach of Esav is the battle that represents, more than anything else, the ultimate battle between good and evil, between Yirah Shamayim and the lack of Yirah Shamayim. Yaakov Avinu being the epitome of the Yarei Shamayim, the one who fears Hashem, the Ish Emes, the man of truth, the one who represents Hashem in this world, Yaakov Avinu, as we as a people represent Hashem, Yaakov Avinu as a person represented Hashem in this world, and the Malach of Esav represents the person who is the antithesis of Hashem in this world. And that dust went up to the Kisei HaKavod, meaning that that which Yaakov Avinu struggled with that Malach, that is always there at the Kisei HaKavod. Remember that on the Merkava, on the chariot of Hashem, there are four images, four faces. There's the face of a lion, and the face of an eagle, and there is a face of a cherub, and the face of a man, and the face of a cherub. The face of a cherub used to be the face of a shor. That was a discussion we had when we learned Yechezkel. But the face of the man is the face of Yaakov Avinu. Because Yaakov Avinu represents what man is supposed to be more than any other person represents that. And this avak raglav, this dust goes up to under the kisei hakavod, and that therefore means that ultimately Hashem has erech hapayim, has slow to anger, and has much strength for the for Yaakov Avinu, and he does not forgive and comes against him with a tempest and with all kinds of punishments against Esav. That battle has the two elements of the way Hashem runs this world, that even though we don't see it all the time, but ultimately Hashem is slow to anger and rewards Yaakov Avinu and those who are like Yaakov Avinu and punishes those who are like Esav. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Goer bayam vayab shehu, he yells at the ocean and dries it up. V'chol ha-neharos hecheriv, and all of the rivers he has also destroyed. Umlal Bashan v'Karmel, the Bashan and the Carmel are desolate. Uferach Levanon Umlal, and the flowering of the Levanon is also desolate. So the pasuk can be read several ways. The simple meaning is that this is the punishment that Hashem brings against his enemies, that all of what they have get destroyed. The ocean and the rivers represent their armies, and then their bounty, their food, that's the Bashan and the Carmel, and all of their flowering, anything that's good that they have, is desolate and destroyed. But there are several things learned from this pasuk. The Gemara tells us that when Hashem created the world, so there were certain things that He created that in the physical world that were growing and getting stronger and bigger. But Hashem wanted them to be calibrated in a certain way, and He wanted them to be a certain size, have a certain strength, and then He wanted them to stop. And the way He stopped them, it says He was goer bum. He yelled at them. So, for example, the Gemara says that the physical world, the globe, was like a pekiah shel amir, like a ball of yarn. And it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then Hashem yelled at it and stopped it. So, what does that mean? That means that this world, representing the physical world, is also a world in which one can forget Hashem, because one can get lost in physicality. Hashem only wanted the physical world to be a certain size. He only wanted it to take up a certain amount of space, leaving room for human beings, of course, to recognize Hashem. And different things like that are represented in the Gemara in Maseches Chagiga. So as well, the Gemara says that the ocean was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then Hashem yelled at it and stopped it from its growth. The ocean represents the world being inhospitable to human beings. That's why when Hashem wanted to destroy the world, He brought a mabul, because a world that is full of water, where there's no dry land, human beings cannot survive. So the world getting bigger, the oceans getting bigger and bigger, would be a world that is inhospitable to human beings. Hashem yelled at it and calibrated it so that certain parts of the world would be inhospitable and certain parts of the world would be hospitable to humans. And that's what Hashem wanted. He wanted the world to be such as we have it today, where roughly a third of the world is land and two-thirds of the world is roughly ocean. That roughly two-thirds of the world is not livable for human beings, and a third of the world is. That's what Hashem wanted it to be, that He wanted the ocean to always have the upper hand. That the ocean is there as if to say that really it doesn't take much for the oceans to inundate the world, as happened in the time of Noach. And before Noach, in the time of Enosh, the waters came in and flooded a third of the world. And that's the way Hashem wanted it to be, that man would never feel completely confident in his place in this world. The dry land is here, but it's limited. You can see how limited it is. So that's referenced in Goer Bayam by Yabshehu. He yelled at the ocean to dry it up, to stop it where it was. There's another reference over here, which really does not fit in the pasuk, in the simple meaning of the pasuk. However, it is derived from here. The very end of the pasuk says, Uferach Levanon Umlo, and the flowering of the Levanon is desolate. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nehyeh b'varach. Many midrashim bring this pasuk, cite this pasuk, these words, for the following. The Mishnah tells, the Gemara tells us there was a tree that grew right inside the Beis HaMikdash, right in the entrance inside the Beis HaMikdash. There was a tree that grew, or a bush that grew, or something that grew. It was made of gold, and it would give off fruit that were gold, meaning it was a golden something that was growing. And it actually bore fruit that were golden. And the Medrash even says that the Kohanim would use that for Parnasa. They were able to use the gold, and they were able to sustain themselves with it. And when, there's two different Midrashim, one Medrash says when the Goyim came into the Beis HaMikdash, the other Medrash says when Menashe put up an idol in the Beis HaMikdash, then it withered and died. And it no longer did that miraculous thing. That is learned from this pasuk, Uferach Levanon Umlo. Levanon often refers to the Beis HaMikdash, and Perach, the flowering of the Levanon, Umlo is desolate. So the Medrash brings this pasuk as a reference to that nace stopping. It doesn't really fit in the pasuk because the pasuk is really talking about the destruction of the Goyim, not about us. But nevertheless, they do derive that from here. Pasuk 8, verse 5. Harim Rashu Mimenu, the mountains quaked, right, from before him. Vagavos Hismo Gagu, and the hills also, they also were, I guess, were melted, right, thank you. Vatisa Aretz Mipanav, and the land was lifted up from before him. Veseva Vachayosh Veva, and the land and all those who dwell in it. They were all scared of Hashem when he came to punish the people of Asher of Nineveh. Lifnei Zamo Miyamo, in front of his anger, who will stand? Umiya Kumba Charona Poen, who will stand? Another word for his anger. Chamaso Nitcha Ka'esh, his anger, it burns like fire. Vahatsurim Nitesumi Menu, and the stones were smashed from before him. All of this is, again, punishment to Ashur and to Nineveh, to those who did the wrong thing. Tov Hashem l'ma'oz b'yom tzara. But Hashem is good for protection on the day of tzara, on the day of terrible things going on. V'yodea choseivo, and he knows those who rely on him. Here we learn that this is something which is learned in several places, that even as Hashem is punishing his enemies, he is still sustaining and taking care of those who are close to him and rely on him, which is something which a flesh and blood king cannot do. Flesh and blood king can only focus on one thing at a time. If he's waging war, he can't focus on taking care of those who are in need. If he's focusing on taking care of those who are in need, he can't focus on waging war. And this is a classic issue with any king or any president. When every time you focus on one thing, the other thing that needs attention. So you focus on foreign policy, then what happens at home? You focus on things going on at home, what happens with foreign policy? If there's a war going on, God forbid, then all energies are focused on that war, and there's very little that can be focused on what is happening at home. It's very difficult to be able to handle all the different needs, but Hashem does both at the same time. Uvishetef over kala yasem mikoma, and with the shetef means inundating, that like a torrent of water, that kind of thing, that's passing through. He does kala, he destroys the place of the enemies. Vayvav yiradef choshech, and his enemies he chases with darkness. Matechashvun el Hashem, what would you consider about Hashem? Kala hu ose, he is doing destruction. Lo sakum pamayim tzara, the tzara will not happen twice. That's not a good thing. This means that he's going to take care of them once and for all. There's no need for a second strike. The first one is going to destroy them all. Kiad sirim svuchim, because this is hard to translate. Even as they are rejoicing, or even as they are happy, they are. let me just tell you, Rashi says this means the punishment will happen suddenly. As they are happy, as they are rejoicing, they are then attacked. Uchesavam sivuim. And even as they are, read it as if it was a sin, as if they are satiated, they are then attacked. They are beaten. Ukelu kekash yavesh malay. They are consumed like dry straw. Imagine dry straw that catches fire. That is in its fullness, and it gets burnt up very quickly. Mimech yatsa choshev al Hashem ra'a, from you, Asher Nineveh, came that who thought against Hashem evil. Yoetz Belial, the one without any yoke, the one who has no fear of Hashem. So, because of that, there is punishment. Ko amar Hashem, so said Hashem. Im shlemim, v'chein rabim. Complete and many. V'chein nagozu v'avar. They would be, nagozu means shorn and cast away. Again, another language for being destroyed. V'ini sich, and I will afflict you. Lo a'aneich od, but I will no longer afflict I won't afflict you anymore. That I will afflict you, but I won't afflict you anymore, because again, there will be no need. One time will be enough. You'll be completely destroyed. However, there's another meaning to this pasuk, which we'll come back to in a minute. Ve'ata eshbor motehu me'alayich, and now I will break his yoke from upon you, the Jews. Umosrosayich anateik, and your chains I will break. Your that which binds you I will break apart. V'tziva alecha Hashem, and Hashem will command upon you, lo yizara mishim cha'od. This is going back to the enemies of Hashem. Hashem will command upon you, your name will no longer bear seed, which means you won't have any more kings. Nobody will be able to bear your name, like with power. Mibase Elohecha achris pesalu masecha, from the house of your idolatry, I will destroy the idols and the graven images. Asim kivrecha ki kalosa, I will put your grave because you are lowly in my eyes. Now, it's nice to have a perek that is so negative, and it's not about us.
Right?
In Treyasa, we've had so much that was Musa against us, and here Nachum is all about the punishment against the non-Jews. What's that?
What's the purpose of it? Because they already did this Avera, and the Navi is, I mean, is this supposed to make us feel good?
It's the Nevuah that's going to happen. It hadn't happened yet. This was the Nevuah that was going
to
happen.
To tell them we're not on their teshuvah. Why would Hashem send the Navi to tell these Ganyim that this is going to happen?
Well, I think he told us also and them.
And so what? The people, the Shvatim were already in Golis. Is that Sarah Shvatim, right? They were already there. And so
this is to show, I believe, that there is schar v'onish, that they're not going to get away with it.
But they would just know they're not going to get away with it, and they see it happen.
Now, it happened already.
No, I mean the punishment happened.
Yeah, yeah.
When Nachum is saying it already happened. But the punishment.
No, not yet. The punishment hadn't happened.
So they would see the onish happened, that to the people who afflicted them.
Right. So there's a nevuah about that. So, it's the when the world works as it should, then people who do averus are punished. That's what happens.
Right.
That which we don't see it is because we're dealing with Hester Punin. Because
no,
we can't.
I understand that the people living at that time would see the, that these people in Nineveh were punished because they did this avera to these Sereshvatim. So why do we need a Navi to tell them that this is going to happen? They would see that it, they people got punished. They did bad.
I think it's much more powerful if it's predicted and then it happens.
So the Bnei Israel at that time heard this Navi.
Think about the Jews had just had seen the Ten Shvatim going to Golas. They really had seen, they were saved. This is after Chizkiyahu. They were saved from Ashur as well. And Ashur was ready to destroy them. Sennacherib was ready to destroy them, and then he was destroyed. But Nineveh endured. So they were, it was still there. They were still doing Averus. Ashur was still doing Averus. And this is the ultimate destruction. We have other Nevuahs about Goyim. Yechezkel has all kinds of Nevuahs about destruction of Mitzrayim. We had before in Amos. Amos also spoke about the various Umos Olam and their destruction.
And also, I was curious before you said that in the beginning, you said, and they were not believing in Hashem. And then you said that they had Nekama for the, they, Hashem was the Nekama for these three offenses. But since when are Goyim taken to task for not believing in Hashem? That we see, that I know that's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, but do we ever, do we see this happening? Like Hashem tells Goyim, because you didn't believe in me, you're going to have...
I mean, right here. What happened, what happened with Nineveh? What was Yonah telling in Nineveh?
They were also doing other Averis.
Yeah, well, that,
just
yeah, but those Averis are...
That led to other things.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's all... But they're all Averis. Averis are Averis.
And so here... We don't
have Avodah Zarah today in the real way that they had it then. But I'm saying Avodah Zarah is a terrible Avera.
Was this directed then to Yehud? I mean, the people who were not in Gauls.
Well, yeah, I mean, the people in Gauls didn't hear it.
Basically, and Nineveh heard
it? I assume Yonah went to Nineveh.
Yeah.
I don't know. If, it doesn't say Nahum went to Nineveh.
Or to Asher for that.
Right. He was prophesying about Nineveh.
Where's he from?
It says Elkosh.
Where is Elkosh?
Yeah,
I don't know.
And so I was curious also because, like, it says with Lebanon and Carmel, they're talking. Those are like Carmel is near Tisrael, right?
Yeah.
So is that why it refers to that?
Well, it's Carmel means a like a lush area.
Okay, one more question. So we always say Hashem, Nake Yinake.
Nake Lo Yinake.
Right, and that's exactly the same word.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's exactly the opposite meaning?
Well, the way the Gemara darshans it is, v'nakei, that he will... the way in the Yud Gimel Midos, the way it says it is that nosei avon rafasha v'chata'a, he carries all types of sins, v'nakei, and he completely cleans a person from their averus. But that's not what the pasuk says. There's really a comma after Nosevon Afesha Vechata'a, comma, Vinake Lo Yinake. And he won't completely cleanse. That's the literal translation. Which sounds like even though he forgives, but the sin is still lingers. That's the literal translation. But Chazal tells us not to read it that way. We read it as that if you do a person does tshuva, then Vinake. Then he gets completely cleansed. But if a person doesn't do tshuva, Lo Yinake. Then he won't. But the real, the if you read it without Chazal's interpretation, it's v'nakei lo yinakei, it won't completely cleanse. So here, you read it in the regular way.
Yeah. In the Torah, it's after, it's v'nakei, and then there's...
No.
The
comma's
like
before.
This?
The comma's before, yeah. Nosei avon v'fesha v'chata'a, comma, v'nakei lo yinakei.
So it's the same like this.
Yeah, but over here, you don't have that phrase beforehand.
So
what Chazal do?
Translating exactly the opposite. No?
I'm saying what Chazal. It's a drasha. What you're used to is a drasha. Nosei avon v'fesha v'chata. Nosei avon v'fesha v'chata. Nosei avon v'fesha v'chata. Comma. V'nakei lo yinakei. What Chazal do is they move the comma over, and they put v'nakei back on the previous line. That's what we're used to with the Yud Gimel Midos.
Okay.
That's what we stopped at.
Right. But isn't it funny that it's the same words and we use it as
It's a drush. Now, on Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, Chazal say as follows, Komar Hashem, Im Shlemim, Shlemim means the V'chein Rabim, and many. Shlemim could mean complete or peace, but Chazal learned it to mean that it's the opposite or the lack of rabim, meaning shalim means just enough, v'chein rabim, and a lot. Whether a person has just enough or whether a person has a lot, v'chein nagozu v'avar. So a person should shear and go, which means, Chazal say, that if a person sees, this is what Chazal say, if a person sees that their finances are dwindling, that they're going down in their finances, then they should give tzedakah. That if a person's finances are diminishing, they should give tzedakah. Im shleimim v'chein rabim. If they only have just enough, or if they have a lot, but if they even have only just enough, v'chein nagozu v'avar, they should shear and go. They should take off some of their own and give tzedakah. And Chazal say a mashal. A mashal is you have two sheep that are crossing a river, and it's not easy going. They could get swept away by the current. So one of the sheep was shorn before crossing the river. The other one was not. So the one that was not shorn and went into the river, the water got waterlogged right into its wool, and it got swept away. Whereas the one that was shorn, so it wasn't, the water went past it. It didn't get stuck on it didn't weigh it down, and it was able to cross the river. So the person who gives away some of their money or much of their money, then they are able to cross that river. But the person who holds on to it all is unable to cross that river. And it's a reference to tzedakah. And then the Gemara says, even an ani hamisparnes mina tzedakah, even a poor person who is getting tzedakah, nevertheless should give tzedakah. As the pasuk says here, V'ini sich, even one who is an ani, even one who is poor, should give tzedakah. Now, that wouldn't seem to make sense. If a person is getting tzedakah, with what are they giving tzedakah? It doesn't make sense to give tzedakah with money that they got for tzedakah. That it's not their money that they earned to give away. Meaning, I'm not saying that it's prohibited, but What are they doing already? The whole point of giving tzedakah is to sustain somebody who doesn't have. Well, they don't have. So they were given tzedakah. So then what does it mean to give away money if they don't have? So the poskim explain I'll talk about ma'aser in a minute, but we're not talking about ma'aser anymore. We're just talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah. A person who is not making enough money to cover their basic expenses is given tzedakah. But that doesn't mean that they're not making any money. We'll just take a round number. Let's say a person needs $1,000 to make ends meet. And they're only making $800. So they're entitled to tzedakah, and we should give them tzedakah. But they're still making $800. So since they are making some money, therefore they should still give some tzedakah. And that's what is being said over here, that even an ani hamisparnes mina tzedakah, even an ani that is getting tzedakah, should still give some tzedakah. A poor person who is making absolutely nothing, has nothing, they're completely, they have no... They're completely supported by tzedakah. then they have nothing to give. They don't give anything at all. Now, none of this is talking about Meiser. Meiser is a whole different discussion. Now, Meiser, there is a very big machlokas about Meiser, but the meaning about the requirement of Meiser, where it comes from, and how it works. But the general consensus is, the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch, is that a person should give 20% of their earnings. Not their assets, but 20% of their earnings should be given away to tzedakah. That's the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch. Then it says in Shulchan Aruch, and if 20% is too much, then a person can give 10%. Everybody always says Meiser, but the truth is, the way it says it is 20%, and if 20% is too much, then a person should give 10%. That's the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch. But that's only talking about a person who is making enough money that they cover their expenses. Then there is a requirement of what we call Meiser or Chomesh, of giving that amount of money. If a person is not meeting their own expenses, then there is no requirement of Meiser or of Chomesh. But there is a requirement of tzedakah. That's what we're learning over here, that still there is a requirement of tzedakah, which means something. A person should be giving something. It's not good for a person, even if they're getting some tzedakah money, or even if they're just barely making it. Nevertheless, a person should not go without giving tzedakah. That's not a healthy thing. It's a good thing for a person to give some tzedakah. Even if they're not making enough money that they could give Meiser, that meaning if they need $1,000, they're not making $1,100 or $1,200, so they can't give Meiser or Chomesh, but if they're making $1,050, they should try to give away that $50. That's a good thing to do, or at least 25 of that $50. They should give something away, because that's a healthy thing to do. Now, that is the halacha, the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch, but that then leads to a discussion of what's called covering your expenses. Right. The caveat here is meeting your expenses. So what does that mean, meeting your expenses? Meaning, in order to be chayev and meiser, a person has to be able to cover their needs. So if a person, obviously it's very subjective, what is a need and what is a luxury? That's very, very subjective. But a person... That is a reason why it is not a bad thing to have a mentor with which to discuss these things with, because it's very hard. We believe, of course, that just about everything we spend money on is a necessity, and there's very little that we believe are luxuries in our lives. We all believe that. But the truth is that from an objective perspective, there could be things that we're spending on that someone would say, you know what, that's really a luxury. That's not really a need. And so, right, so it's always good to have an objective set of eyes on judgments like this. But even if judging ourselves, a person knows whether they feel like they're making money and they're able to put money away and, you know, they're settled, or if a person feels like at the end of each month or before the end of each month they're really, really struggling. So then it's pretty straightforward whether they're meeting their needs or not. But that leads to another discussion, which is what, let's say one is meeting their needs and now they therefore should give either Meiser or Chomesh, or 20%. To what is a valid way to spend that Meiser and that 20%? What is it valid? What do you spend it on? What's called tzedakah? So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, and we generally follow this opinion, that tzedakah means giving the money away to either a poor person or to an institution that deals with either poor people, orphans, etc., or a Torah institution. That's the way that we give our Meiser to. Possibly, this is a discussion, but possibly to mitzvah organizations as well. Like the mikveh, for example, is a mitzvah organization. It's not for poor people, and it's not a Torah organization, but it's a mitzvah organization. Okay, so I guess you could also say that you can give money over there to help a poor person go to the mikveh, but typically it's a mitzvah organization. So that's where the tzedakah goes. The Rav Avadia Yosef, on the other end of the spectrum, says that that a person's children living at home, feeding them, clothing them, educating them, is all a valid recipient of one's miser. He then asks on himself, if that's true, then it would only be the very, very, very wealthy that would actually give money away, because the vast majority of people, their own the expenses for their children, for clothing, feeding, educating their children, far exceeds the amount of miser that they have, or even chomesh. So he says, yeah, who says that there's a requirement on, he says, yeah, my sir chomesh, to give money away, meaning to give it to outside of the family, is only for the very, very wealthy. Mm-hmm. It's not for the rank and file. That's what he writes. Now, most poskim disagree. As I said, Rav Moshe Feinstein disagrees with that. And our practice is like Rav Moshe, but there is an opinion like that, which then leads to the discussion of can one use their maaser or their chomesh for tuition? So Rav Avadia Yosef would say, for sure one can. Rav Moshe Feinstein says one cannot. And then you have those who fall somewhere in the middle. And there are those who say that it can be used for the Torah education part of the education, not for the secular part of the education, which, in the way we educate our children, it would come out to roughly half of a person's tuition bill would be, according to this opinion, would be a valid way to spend one's miser, and the other half would not be, which, again, for most people, that would exhaust their miser. For the vast majority of people, that would exhaust their miser, because their miser would not equal more than half of what they're spending in tuition. If they have more than one tuition already, then it's highly unlikely that their miser is going to exceed half of the tuition that they are paying.
When we're talking about miser, is it pre-tax or after tax?
So get to taxes in a minute. So you have different opinions over here. As I said, Rav Moshe Feinstein knows you can't use any of the money for tuition. So really, because Rav Moshe is the Iker, is the main Lahalachi, is the main posik, so therefore one should strive not to use their Meiser money for tuition, but there is what to rely upon if one needs to do so. What I always tell people is, even if they are going to use some of their Meiser towards tuition, but they should not use all of their Meiser towards tuition, because it's always good to give some money away. It's not a good thing for a person to be completely insular and all their money stays with them. It's not a good midah, and it's just, you see over here, giving your money away helps with your finances. It's not a good thing for a person to be completely, all their money stays within their own family. It's just not a healthy attitude, not a healthy thing to do. Now, taxes, again, here we have Rav Moshe to turn to. Rav Moshe writes that income tax, whether it's government, whether it's federal, state, or local income tax, is deducted before calculating Meiser. Because Rav Moshe writes that income tax is never yours, meaning although you may bring it home and then pay it, and it's depending on the person. Sometimes people pay estimated taxes, some people, but the money is withheld, the government is taking the money. If the government's taxing 30 cents to the dollar, what they're saying is every dollar you earn, you're not really earning a dollar. You're only earning 70 cents, and 30 cents belongs to us. That's what the government is saying. So it's never yours to begin with, and therefore you don't take off Maaser from that 30 cents, only from the 70 cents. That's what Moshe writes. So that's true of income tax, state, federal, local income tax. Sales tax, on the other hand, sales tax is different. Because sales tax, it's your money, but when you buy something, the government says you have to pay an extra penny to the government for every, whatever it is, 6 cents or 5 cents, you have to pay an extra penny to the government. So there, it's your money. So even though you spend it on sales tax, that money would still need to be misered beforehand. Nobody thinks of it that way. It would be very difficult to, let's say sales tax were exempt from MISA. You have to figure it out. It would be very hard to know how much money am I going to spend on sales tax this year, right? It's hard to figure out. But imagine, it's not going to happen, but imagine if we would go to a flat tax, then that would incorporate sales tax as well. Then that would be the government saying, you don't have that money. That money is ours. And one would not take off, that would be deducted pre-calculating MISA. So again, that's the way Rav Moshe presents it, and that's why one is allowed to calculate their Maaser based on what their take-home pay is and ignore what was withheld. And then if they get a refund after April 15th, then they would take off Maaser from that refund, because that's money that wasn't going to the government, they would take off Maaser. But whatever does go to the government, that does not get Maaser.
So even if the government thinks we're getting something from it, from our taxes, right? So that even though we're benefiting,
that's okay.
Okay, let's
say you're given a gift. Say someone gives you a gift. They give you a watch. A client is very thankful and gives you a watch, and the watch is appraised at $100. You don't have to give Maaser on that. Maaser is only on cash, not on items.
But I was really going to pay for benefits, from insurance benefits.
Yeah, so really, one should speak to a competent Rav about these things, but when one has that withheld, that really should be misered, and people forget about that. Since it comes off of their paycheck, they never see the money, but really what's happening over there is they're being paid, and they're buying an insurance policy,
Where I was going in my first part of the question. Because the government thinks we're buying.
Yeah, but you're not. You're not buying anything. The government is saying you got to pay this. You're not. The government is saying you have to pay this whether you like it or not. Now, if you happen to benefit, if you live in an area where you're not benefiting anything from what the government's doing, it doesn't matter. You still have to pay it. The government's not assessing you based on what you're gaining. This is the tax law.
No, I'm saying from a logical perspective, that why is it that you shouldn't have to do it? Because you're getting this and the government takes it.
I know.
There's a lot of money that goes into insurance that people never see because...
Yeah, but that's different. They're really, you could purchase your own insurance policy, but you have the right, that your business is offering you an insurance policy to pay out of your paycheck for it. So you're just, but that's what you're doing. Your business would say, instead of going grocery shopping, you can have $100 withheld and we'll send you groceries instead.
That's
what's happening.
By the same token, the employer doesn't usually give you the option of, okay, we're not going to pay your insurance, and so we're giving you this much more money.
Okay, so if you don't have an option, then you might not have to, then it would be different. That's what I'm saying, you speak to a competent rough. If you don't have the option of getting cash rather than the policy, then you're just being given a policy. So then you don't take off Maaser from that. But if it's a choice, you can buy into the policy or not buy into the policy. Then basically you're paying something with the money that you earn. Sometimes the way it works is that if you buy into the policy, you get more money. Meaning that the policy costs $100. So if you want to buy into it, fine. Otherwise, you'll get $60. They're not going to give you the full 100.
Right.
So then, really, that 40 is not yours ever. That's not yours at all. It's only the 60 that could have been yours.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. If you have questions like this, you should speak to a competent Rav. Right.
And you don't pay tax on that also.
On what? Yeah, yeah, it's a tax-free, right? Right, which is a nice thing. Right, that's a nice thing.
Yeah. Final goes insurance. Or you get deducted automatically.
When you go, that's why when businesses do that, then
yes,
you,
Meister, but not the other.
Yeah, right. It's a little confusing about that. Business expenses do not need to have Meister taken off, even if the government does not recognize it as a business expense. So that means any money that you spend on working is pre Meister. That's why all student loans that are being paid back should be deducted pre-Meister, because all student loans are in order to work. That was the reason why the person took out the student loan, was in order to work. Therefore, it is a business expense. If it is true, for example, that the position in which you work requires you to wear a black hat, then the purchase of a black hat is a business expense. I asked my accountant it's part of my uniform, I have to wear a black hat, so could I deduct that from as a business expense? He said, of course you can. You just have to have the Ask logo emblazoned on the front of your black hat. If you do that, then you can deduct it as a business expense.
But inside, maybe.
No, it's going to be on the outside for all to see. That's what he said.
Right? But you can take Meister from your hat.
Well, I don't know. I'm using it as an example. I'm saying, in theory, if a person would argue that that is something that they're purchasing because it's part of their uniform for their business, even if the government wouldn't recognize it as such because it doesn't have the emblem, but still it could theoretically be a business expense from a Meister perspective because it's a business expense. Now, the business expense that the Meister recognizes is not necessarily dependent on the government recognizing, even though there'll be a lot of crossover.
If somebody gave me $100 cash, I have to pay Meister, but if they give me a $100 gift card, then what?
Okay, that's a good question. A gift card is always a gray area. I'll leave it as a gray area. Because the question is, do we treat it as cash or not, right? If you can cash it out, and it is cash, right? But often it's not, an Amazon gift card is really cash because that can be spent anywhere. I'm sorry, a Visa gift card. A Visa gift card is cash. It can be spent anywhere. But an in-store gift card is not really cash. I can only spend it in that store. And, I can't use it to pay my rent. So that's not really cash.
You still spend it.
What's that?
You're still spending it. Basically, what that means
is the person who gave it to you is saying, I want to get you something from the store. I just don't know what you would like.
Yeah.
So here, you do it for me. That's what they're saying, right? So, right.
I mean, but if they had given you a sweater and you'd returned it, you have cash.
There you go.
Right. But a Visa gift card is basically cash. It's just a fancy way of giving cash.
So, So where is it that it says this pasuk is referring to tzedakah? Where's
the Gemara? It's a Gemara in Gittin.
And is it talking about maser or ani tzedakah?
No, it's not talking. This pasuk is not talking
only
about maser.
Any tzedakah.
It's talking about giving tzedakah. Yeah. This pasuk is not a discussion about maser. That's what it says, that if a person sees their money is dwindling, they should give tzedakah. It's not about Meister.
So why is it that the Gemara needs this pasuk to tell that?
I can't tell you that.
The Torah says, give tzedakah.
It doesn't say that if your money is going dwindling, you should give tzedakah. The Gemara is saying for me.
It says that if you don't...
No. How do you know if a person is losing money, they should give tzedakah? You want to say this is a good pasuk to hang your hat on. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't know it otherwise. A pasuk in Navi is anyway always to strengthen us and to give us more chizuk and things. The Navi never says a new thing. That's not a... Okay.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.